You're listening to another.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is July 31st, 2015, the last day of July. August on its way, dog days of summer. Hope all of you are having a terrific week. An awful lot for us to catch up on and play that game of catch up today. Those of you familiar with me know I'm retired INS Senior Special Agent. My mission that I have accepted ever since the terror attacks of 9/11 is to try to provide my perspectives, experiences on the immigration issue and how it is tied to national security, public safety, crime, a host of issues that most people don't, for some reason, understand are all intertwined with what we do at our nation's borders and what we do in terms of the administration and enforcement of our immigration laws from within the interior of the United States. Those of you, again, familiar with me know about my websites, but let me give them to you once again. My own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word. I also have been writing for years for a terrific organization out in Santa Barbara, California. Great folks in a beautiful part of the country, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. I write for Front Page Magazine, Progressives for Immigration Reform, and The Social Contract has just published a major analysis that I just did for them in their quarterly magazine. It's available for the wonderful price of free. That's right, it's free. And it's called The 9/11 Commission Report and Immigration, an assessment 14 years after the attacks. Very straightforward title, very straightforward analysis, showing not only my perspectives, but the perspectives of the members of the 9/11 Commission. And I back it up with a ton of specific examples in terms of how the immigration system failed, whether it was the fact that we admitted the terrorists who attacked us in 1993, whether it was that we allowed in the terrorists who attacked us on 9/11. We've let in many other people who went on to launch terrorist attacks. We've provided lawful immigrant status, political asylum, even U.S. citizenship to people who've attacked us. How in the world can our politicians not get it? And so it's been unbelievable to me that the 9/11 Commission was convened. Thousands of people were interviewed. They did an amazing job putting together an encyclopedia of information about everything that happened on 9/11, what led up to it, what vulnerabilities were identified, and incredibly, listen to the debates out there, folks, with the exception of just a few members of Congress, Lou Barletta, a good friend of mine, member of Congress from Pennsylvania, he is one of just very few members of Congress who are even willing to utter the word 9/11 Commission in the same breath when talking about immigration. It's astonishing. And the 9/11 Commission and the 9/11 Commission staff made it abundantly clear that there was a nexus between the failures of the immigration system and the attacks. And you know, it is so astonishing that for years, immigration has been pushed to the back burner. The globalists, the people that want the cheap labor, want that supply of tourists, the people who want the foreign students to come here. We now have well over a million foreign students studying in more than 9,000 schools across the country. Half those schools may not even exist in the real world. We don't know. We don't have the resources to investigate them. And yet, you know, no one says a word. 6 months to the day after 9/11, two of the dead terrorists, to everyone's horror, were discovered to have been granted authorization to attend flight school 6 months after the attacks. I mean, put that one together. It blows the mind. They were terrorists. They were dead. The world knew that they were dead terrorists 6 months after the attacks, Yet immigration went ahead and gave them permission to go to school. And of all places, flight school, and they had been hijackers. You could almost do a Saturday Night Live comedy skit over this, but there's nothing funny here. There is no punchline. The punchline is we are vulnerable. And recently, within the last year or two, there have been articles about 6,000 foreign students going missing in the United States. There were actually many more than 6,000, but the government actually said that those 6,000 might even pose a threat to our safety, might have a nexus to terrorism. 6,000. I mean, the numbers boggle the mind. Think what just 19 terrorists did on 9/11, not just to the United States, but to the world. The entire world changed on 9/11/2001 because of the actions of 19 individuals. And we have tens of thousands of refugees being admitted into the United States without being properly screened. The FBI has made it abundantly clear that we can't screen these people. And I'm not anti-immigrant, and I'm not anti-political asylum. I feel strongly about asylum. Those of you, again, familiar with me know I'm Jewish. My grandmother died in the Holocaust. When I was a president of the B'nai B'rith, a Jewish organization, Jewish service organization, a long time ago, which is why I have all this gray hair, I went with a bunch of other folks, and not just from Jewish organizations. Dr. Martin Luther King sent Ralph Abernathy, who worked very closely with him. This was back in 1964, 1965. We participated in a massive demonstration across the street from the White House. It was estimated that there were between 10 and 20,000 people there. And we got a telegram from the president supportive of our position. And our position was to convince him, LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, to get the Russians to allow Jews and other religious minorities to leave Russia and come to the United States or any other country that would have them so they could practice religious freedom. They could get away from the tyranny. And so for me, as an immigration inspector, just a few short years later, because I began my career with the INS in 1971, it was exciting to be assigned to admit refugees into the United States, to sit in that booth and sign my name on their documents and see these people hug me and cry and kiss the floor. I mean, you had to be there to experience it. It was some of the most emotional memories that I have of my entire career. Were the memories I have from the days that I admitted refugees into the United States. It was absolutely a privilege. But you see, we must never, as I've said in congressional hearings, we must never permit America's kindness and generosity to be seen as a weakness, to be seen as a place where we could be exploited and we could wind up with Americans being killed. That's all that I want. I want to make certain that on this continuum of safety, on this continuum of compassion, that we put our fellow Americans at the top of the list. Not unlike a family that races into a burning building to save their own children before they try to save anybody else's kids. Nobody would ever complain and say, holy smoke, look at that news report. That woman went into a burning building and actually saved her own children first. What's wrong with her? Would you ever see a headline like that? Then why in the world do we hear this nonsense about compassion, but God help you if you ever invoke compassion for Americans? 1 in 4 American children now living below the poverty line. Tens of millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans. But we're told, oh, if you don't want to let the world come to the United States, you lack compassion. This is lunacy. This is sheer craziness, and we're hearing it from both sides of the aisle. And I've got to tell you, I am so enjoying this whole business with Donald Trump and watching all the politicians squirm. You know, people have asked me in the past to run for Congress, and I have a standard line. It's sort of a joke, but not really. My answer is no, thank you. I don't run for Congress. I run from Congress. I've done, I don't know, 16, 17 hearings in the House and Senate. I wish they would have listenings. I wish they would have listenings. So now suddenly you have all these politicians squirming and running for cover. You know, the anger and the frustration being pointed at Donald Trump, and I'm not here advocating for Trump. I'm not campaigning for him. I'm just observing and enjoying what I'm seeing. I love to see politicians twitch. The more they twitch, the happier I am. And they are so angry at Donald Trump for daring to talk about immigration and securing the border and making certain that Americans don't die. They're actually angrier at Trump than they are at this piece of trash, the scum that killed Steinle, Kate Steinle. They are angrier at Donald Trump than they are at this administration for letting criminals out of jail and not securing the borders and lying about where we now stand. They're venting their wrath on Trump more than on anything else, because Donald Trump had the spine, the guts, the chutzpah to stand there and say, damn it, we've got to change the equation. We've got to enforce our laws. Now, I don't know where Trump stands on bringing in more foreign workers. And I say, enough. We have enough Americans unemployed and underemployed. We're graduating so many American kids with those STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math degrees. These lies that are being told by Silicon Valley. And they're lies. Oh, we don't have enough workers here. Really? Then why are you laying off thousands and thousands and thousands of highly qualified and experienced Americans? And if those Americans were doing such a crappy job, why were they working there for so many years? And if they were doing such a crappy job, why is it that Disney, for example, and I will never go to Disney, I will go anywhere. You know, you just won the World Series. Well, I'm going to Disney World. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I'd rather sit in my backyard and watch grass grow. For them to be able to fire Americans, we need to fire them. We need to boycott anti-American companies. And America, to me, ladies and gentlemen, is not about lakes and parks and streams and trees and cities and all that. America is its people. Just like that song that Sinatra used to sing, the house I live in. You know, it starts out, and I'm not going to sing because I can't. I used to make a lot of money singing. People paid me not to. But there's that wonderful song, and it begins, "What is America to me?" And he ended that song by saying, most of all, it's its people. So how in the world is America leading when American wages are going nowhere, when more and more Americans have lost their homes to foreclosure, when more and more American kids are living below the poverty line, and where more and more kids are at risk from drug addiction? And we're going to get into that in a little bit. Drug addiction. I mean, astonishing. Astonishing. This war on police by this administration. And again, I'm not coming at this from the right. I'm a lifelong Democrat. The Democrats aren't Democrats. Saw an interesting segment today where Debbie Wasserman Schultz was being interviewed on MSNBC, and I've been on MSNBC many, many times, not recently, but over the years. I've been on with them at least 100 times. I went down with them to California to do a debate on immigration several years ago. They certainly lean way to the left. But it was amazing to see Chris Matthews on MSNBC asking Debbie Wasserman Schultz, leading Democrat, to differentiate the Democratic Party from the Socialists. And she went to the cupboard, and it was bare. She couldn't come up with an answer. So she wanted to talk about comparing the Democrats to the Republicans. You know, when I was an agent, and I would try to interrogate somebody, and the guy would try to be, you know, devious and give you all kinds of answers other than for the question you asked them, I had a standard answer. I'd say, hey, listen, you need to answer the question that I'm asking you, not the question you wished I was asking you. So there's Debbie Wasserman Schultz, unable to describe the difference between Democrats and socialists. Blew my mind. Blew my mind. This is not the Democratic Party that I grew up with when I was a kid in Brooklyn, the party that my parents belonged to. But I have problems with the Republican Party also. I've come to call the two parties the Democrats and the Repugnant Cans, because neither party stands for the average American. And if you believe that they do, you're delusional. Get a checkup from the neck up, because you're crazy. They don't. They don't care about the average American. They care about their campaign contributors, and they care about the special interest groups that promise to deliver blocks of votes. It's all about winning the election and nothing more. And that's what's so refreshing about Trump, because he not only doesn't need anybody's money, he's made it clear he doesn't want anybody's money, so now he doesn't have to pander to anybody. I mean, that's kind of refreshing. That by itself is great fun to watch, that we have a presidential candidate who flat out stands in front of the audience and says, I don't need any money. So don't bother giving me money. I'm going to run my own campaign, do what I want. He has no handlers. He has no one sitting there whispering in his ear. He has nobody running interference like Hillary Clinton, who had a big problem trying to answer anybody's questions. I mean, this is incredible stuff. This is definitely not the America that I grew up in as a kid in Brooklyn. I'm not sure what country we've morphed into, but America, not so much. And so you look at the impact of all of this, the destruction of the middle class, this overwhelming need by the corporations to bring in cheap foreign labor, and the labor, of course, then sends money out of the country. And I was watching Fox and Friends, I think it was just yesterday, and Rick Perry came on. And Rick Perry, you know, is running these commercials. And what his commercials are is Perry standing in front of this admiring crowd. They always have this crowd. I don't know if they're stunt doubles or what they are, but all the politicians like to be there with all these people cheering, yay. And what does Perry say? I told the president, if you won't secure the border, Mr. President, Texas will. And then there's a picture of him looking macho on some little boat going up the Rio Grande with a bunch of state officials, perhaps the National Guard, looked very macho. And everything is all about the Mexican border. Now, don't get me wrong, we've got to secure that border, and I've spoken about this innumerable times. But what's wrong with our immigration system goes well beyond the Mexican border. You know, that's why I wrote that article for Front Page Magazine that I called Border Security and the Immigration Colander. The point of the matter being that the border is only one hole in that colander that we use to drain pasta. And the politicians, incredibly, I mean, what is wrong with the average American? The politicians have Americans convinced that if you could partially plug one hole in the bottom of a colander, it becomes a whole new tool. It becomes a bucket. Is there anybody out there dopey enough to think that plugging a hole in the bottom of a colander will enable you to use it as a bucket? But that's what they're telling us. Once we secure that border. And I was watching the interview with Rick Perry, and he was being asked by Steve Doocy and Brian Kilmeade, what do you plan to do about the border? Nobody ever says, what are you planning to do about the immigration system? Oh, no, we're not going to talk about that. You know, it's remarkable. It is estimated that at least 40% of the illegal aliens in the United States today did not run the border but came through ports of entry, airports and so forth, and then violated the terms of their admission. So they're inside the United States. So if you could take the deflector shield off the Starship Enterprise and make the Mexican border 100% impermeable, where even a fly or a mosquito can't get from Mexico to the United States by flying over the border and doing whatever, that won't stop the problem. But nobody ever says to the candidates, what do you plan to do about all those visa overstays, the visa violators? And by the way, the terrorists were visa violators, okay? They didn't run the Mexican border, and it's right in the 9/11 report that most of the terrorists, and not only the 9/11 terrorists, but other terrorists that they looked at, because they looked back over a period of 10 years, and almost all of the terrorists entered the United States through ports of entry with altered documents and so forth. But we never hear about that. And it's by design. This is not an accident. This is absolutely not an accident. The fact of the matter is, they want everybody to keep staring at the Mexican border and ignoring everything else. Just watch that little hole in the bottom of the colander, and once it stops dripping from that hole, we'll declare it a success. Really? Honest? Do you believe that? And so Perry comes on, Rick Perry, former governor of Texas, and, I'm for Kate's Law, and that poor girl was killed, and yes, sanctuary cities. And then it was really remarkable, because I think it was Steve Doocy, and he's a nice enough guy. I've been interviewed by these folks. I've been on Fox and Friends a bunch of times. Hate getting up at that ungodly hour, but it's always nice to be on the set with them. It's a nice way to start the morning, grab my cup of coffee and come out there and hopefully provide my perspectives. But they asked Rick Perry about in-state tuition, because he has been a staunch advocate for in-state tuition, as far as I know, from day one, since the issue came up. And so here we go again. You would think it's a simple question. Do you favor in-state tuition? Well, that's a yes or a no, right? Do you like vanilla ice cream? Yes or no. Do you like to drive a car? You know, do you like to go swimming? Yes or, I mean, how hard is that question? Well, Perry's answer was, well, that's something that we have to do on the state-by-state business. And you know, if the federal government did its job, those aliens wouldn't be here anyway. Well, maybe that's right. Maybe there'd be no illegal aliens if the feds did their job properly. But that wasn't the question. The question is, we live in a real world, and we now have, and forget this 11 million figure nonsense, it's about as meaningful as the unemployment numbers. Yeah, we have a 5.5% unemployment rate. All you've got to do is ignore tens of millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans. Right. Those statistics are worth bupkis. They're meaningless. So the reality is, should they have secured the border? Yeah, they should have. Did they? No, they didn't. So where are we now? We have tens of millions of illegal aliens in our country, and in most cases, we can't even figure out who they are or when they actually got here. Okay? Straightforward question. Governor Perry, where do you stand on in-state tuition? It's a states' rights issue. Or he said it's a state-by-state issue, which is the same thing, really, as saying states' rights. Never answered the question, but he made it clear he was opposed to sanctuary cities. So let me show you what's wrong with this whole little scenario. A sanctuary city, for those of you not familiar with the jargon, and after all that's happened, I'm sure you are, and you've been listening to my show, so I know that you're educated about this stuff, hopefully. But a sanctuary city is a city that refuses to take into account the immigration status of aliens who live in their town, refuse to contact the police, refuse to do anything that has to do with our immigration laws. That's a sanctuary city, which is crazy. Because if you look at the statutes that deal with harboring and smuggling illegal aliens, it talks about aiding, abetting, encouraging, inducing, harboring, shielding aliens who are here illegally or aliens seeking to come here. You would think, then, that sanctuary cities are guilty of violating that section of law. That's a 5-year felony per alien, per count. But okay, let's put that aside. How can you be against sanctuary cities when you favor in-state tuition for illegal aliens? Because now what they're saying is, listen, if you're an illegal alien, not only don't we want to call the police, but when we find out you're an illegal alien, we will give you a benefit that you would not be entitled to if you were here legally. I mean, I want you to just stop and let those words sink in. I want you to digest those words. Think about what I've just said to you. If an alien is here legally, then they're not entitled to in-state tuition if they come from another state. But if you're an illegal alien, we open up the doors, and we open up the bankrolls, and we provide you with a financial incentive to go to our schools. Lunacy. How in the world can you say to voters, I am against sanctuary cities and still favor giving in-state tuition to illegal aliens? Well, Perry's no dummy. He thinks we are, apparently, because he knew that if he answered yes to that question, it opens up a Pandora's box, because then a whole bunch of other questions start to flow. Well, wait a minute, Governor. You want to give in-state tuition to illegal aliens? Isn't that part of what sanctuary cities do? And then what is he supposed to say? I don't know. I feel stupid. I'm dumb. I mean, what was he going to say? So he sidestepped the whole question. You wonder why people can't trust politicians? That's the classic example. And I'm not just beating up on Rick Perry, because I'm sick of seeing this and hearing this from all of them, which is why Donald Trump is doing so well. But again, I'd love to know where he stands about this issue of hiring Americans before we hire anybody else. That, to me, is the presidential candidate I will vote for. And I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. I want a president who puts American citizens first. What a novel thought. Wow. We could be onto something here, couldn't we? So Perry, you know, ignores the question, avoids the question. And I want you to think about where this leads. How many times have we heard that it makes no sense to have foreign students come to America, get educated, and then go back to their home country? We should be stapling green cards onto the diplomas of foreign students. So you don't think that Rick Perry and the others who are advocates for in-state tuition don't believe that the aliens who get those cut-rate educations, cut-rate costs, but they're getting first-rate education, you don't think that they believe that those students should be allowed to stay here and get a green card so they can work in America now that we've educated them? How does that help unemployed and underemployed Americans? How does that help students, American students and lawful immigrant students? How does that help America's minority kids who are struggling to get out of poverty? And the more people that we bring here from other countries, the more money that they send home. So right now, the remittance is being wired out of the United States, as I've noted on prior programs. That money alone, when you look at the multiplier effect, more than accounts for the annual increase in America's national debt. This is not a minor issue. And do you know, according to published reports, how much money Americans owe on student loans? Do you have any idea, folks? Well, if you don't know, you better sit down and put on your seatbelt, because here it comes. According to published reports, the amount of money owed for student loans is in excess of $1.2 trillion, with a T, not a B, $1 trillion. What in the world are those kids supposed to do to pay off those student loans that look more like mortgages if they can't get a job? What was the point to the exercise of going to college, studying hard, and pouring all that money into a program that won't get you a job if we keep on hiring foreign workers over American workers? It's all well and good that we hear from Mr. Perry, we're going to secure that border. Ooh-ha. But if you're here illegally, I'll give you in-state tuition. No big deal. This is lunacy. This is, I'm going to be in two places at one time. This is, I'm going to undermine America's middle class even more. Do you wonder why this is the first generation in I don't know how long where the expectation is that the kids will not do as well as their parents did financially? Part of it is this mindset of bringing in foreign workers, giving in-state tuition for illegal aliens. And when you start to reward illegal behavior more than legal behavior, what's the message? You're an idiot if you follow the law. This is anarchy. And yet the Republicans very sanctimoniously and very prim and proper and prissy, oh, we're a nation of law. We're a nation of the Constitution. Really? But if you're here illegally, we'll give you a benefit you would not otherwise get if you were here legally. But we're a nation of law, don't you forget it. And we must believe in American exceptionalism. What does American exceptionalism mean other than a punchline in a speech? Boy, it sounds so good, doesn't it? We are an exceptional country. Yes, exceptionally stupid, led by the biggest bunch of wackaloons. How exceptional are we if we then need to bring in the world's best and brightest? Folks, if we were truly exceptional, the world's best and brightest are called Americans. Called Americans. But don't ask Mr. Perry, because I'm sure he will be the artful dodger and do the two-step in one way or the other and dance around the whole issue, because he wants to give illegal aliens in-state tuition, even as we're cutting the funding for American kids, kids with learning disabilities, kids who live in poverty, kids who need to get out of poverty by some other means besides crime. You have a president of the United States who visits jails but never contacted the Steinle family from every report that I've read, who talks about releasing nonviolent drug traffickers from prison. Folks, the words nonviolent drug trafficker, they don't go together. That's an oxymoron. Just because someone pleads guilty to possession of drugs and not possession of a weapon didn't mean that they didn't have weapons there. Now, there may be a couple of exceptional cases, but we're talking about a president who is hell-bent on opening up the prison cells, just what America needs. And how is it working out for Baltimore that with all of this anti-police rhetoric, and that's not to say that the police don't make mistakes. You have police like every other profession, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But if you keep on attacking the cops and you make it clear to them that no matter what they do, they can only get in trouble, just like George W. did with the Border Patrol, with Ramos and Compey on. If you keep on making it clear that if you're in law enforcement and you take action, you're in trouble, you're either going to get killed, injured, fired, sued, suspended, or prosecuted, what cop in his right mind is going to go charging into a gun battle? Any reasonably intelligent police officer is going to hear on the radio shots fired, and they're going to drive slowly enough that by the time they get there, it's all over. So now all they have to do is secure a crime scene rather than engage in a shootout where they may die or be charged with excessive force or get sued. I mean, there's no good possibility for them. So the smartest thing, which is called self-preservation, which we all engage in, only a crazy person operates in a way that puts them at risk, unreasonably so. So the police look at the situation, they hear shots fired, and I'm sure they're saying, well, pardon me, let's not get there until the smoke clears. Because what good can come of showing up in the middle of a blazing gun battle and then having to take action and then wind up in jail? That's the situation law enforcement is in today. And it took how long to get the White House to lower the flag on the White House to half staff because of those military folks in Tennessee who were gunned down? But the president is all excited about people in jail who are turning their lives around. This could almost be a skit for a bad comedy, but there's nothing funny here. There's nothing funny here, folks. This is a dangerous situation. It's a very dangerous situation, and I look at it as an American. I look at it as a former federal agent, and I find it all very disturbing. But you see, it's coming at us from all directions. And it was funny because I was watching Bill O'Reilly. He had Chuck Grassley on, and I have tremendous respect for Senator Chuck Grassley. In fact, Senator Grassley invited me to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Immigration back in March of 2013. I've worked with his staff for a whole bunch of years on immigration-related issues. He has a bunch of dedicated folks working for him, with him, however you want to look at it. I had the privilege of testifying in Dubuque, Iowa, at a field hearing where I sat next to Senator Grassley. And he did something very remarkable. He repudiated his own position on the amnesty of 1986. And it's a rare man that can do that, or a woman. It takes leadership, it takes morality, it takes a spine. And he said, you know, I supported the amnesty of 86, but now I see that I was wrong, and we must not make the same mistake again. And he was speaking out against comprehensive reform. So Grassley was on because they're working on Kate's Law, which really many of the elements are in the law that already exists, because I'd worked with Senator D'Amato 30 years ago to make unlawful reentry for a criminal alien a maximum of 20 years in jail. They're going to tweak it a little bit. They're going to make some changes. I really don't care. That's fine. But this is a very important way of approaching things, because in 2010, that law that Al D'Amato pushed through was the most frequently prosecuted federal crime in the United States. 30% of all federal prosecutions were for the reentry law that we got through the Congress almost 30 years ago, 25 to 30 years ago. I don't have the exact date off the top of my head. But what was remarkable, and O'Reilly isn't unique, I've heard this from so many people, it makes me crazy. Because Bill O'Reilly said that we're talking about felons, not simply illegal aliens who are law-abiding. Folks, please listen. Please listen. You cannot use the term law-abiding and illegal alien in the same sentence. Okay? It doesn't work. You can't be law-abiding if your simple presence in our country represents a violation of some of our most fundamental laws. Our immigration laws were enacted to protect innocent lives and the jobs of American workers. That's about as fundamental as it gets. So if you're here illegally, How in the world are you law-abiding? This is like the madness of Chuck Schumer, who holds news conferences and demands to know why they don't pass a federal law so that if you trespass on a landmark like the Brooklyn Bridge or the World Trade Center or the Statue of Liberty, that should be, in Schumer's words, a 5-year felony. He says, you know, right now in New York, it's only a 1-year felony, or if it is a felony or misdemeanor, I'm not sure if it's a year and a day or whichever. But he said they're only getting 30 days in jail, if that much, or 90 days in jail. And he said, you know, the solution, make this a federal offense and put them away for 5 years, and people will stop trespassing. I mean, it takes your breath away. Here's Schumer, one of the eight gangsters, as I call them. And he says that we should make trespassing on a national landmark a 5-year federal felony. However, if you trespass on America, Schumer believes that the alien is now entitled to citizenship. It blows my mind. Aliens who run our borders are trespassing. It's not that they're uninspected. It's that they are trespassing, and we can't verify their identities or when they got here. And then you have these talk show folks. You can probably see them this coming Sunday. They're there. And, you know, they always have this look of, I'm brilliant, and you need to listen to what I'm telling you. It's the game. They got their game face on. And you hear the same pontification, turn the dial, I don't care who you're listening to. Well, if some undocumented immigrant entered the United States 5, 6, 8, 10 years ago, pick a number, whatever number the guy comes up with, and they've never been arrested, the fingerprints are clean, well, of course we should incorporate them into America and give them legal status. Don't you think that's simple enough? They ask rhetorically. And all the other talking heads cluck. Yes, yes, of course you're right. Of course you're right. It's not right. No one is asking, even if you think this isn't a bad idea, and I think it's a bad idea, but even if you think it's a great idea, you can't do it with integrity. Because here's the question nobody ever gets asked, because they will never bring on an immigration expert when they do this, or almost never. They'll bring on a sheriff, they'll bring on a pollster, they'll bring on a radio talk show host. You know, when the topic is cancer, they bring in biochemists and oncologists and scientists and all kinds of professionals. When they were covering the New Horizons spacecraft doing the flyby past Pluto, they brought in astrophysicists and astronomers and astronauts. There you go. When they talk about military strategy, they bring in the generals and the commandos and the Navy SEALs. But when they talk about immigration, they bring on talk show hosts and pollsters. What in the world is going on? An airplane crashes, they bring in engineers and pilots. Again, any other area, they bring in people who are experts in the field, but not immigration, because if you bring someone on, then it doesn't have to be me. It doesn't have to be me. Let them bring on some young lady, in fact, who may be retired recently and looks a hell of a lot better than I do. I'd rather watch her than me anyway if they could bring some nice-looking young lady on. You know, I'm good with that. But bring on somebody who has real-world experience. Because the question that needs to be asked and answered, can't dodge them like you did Rick Perry, doesn't work. How do you determine how long an illegal alien has been residing in the United States if they ran the border? There's no record of their entry that's created. Now, here's the other part of it. Because we're dealing with millions of applications, there will be no interviews. There will be no field investigations. The adjudicator will be told you have to do a dozen applications a day. In order to do a dozen a day, you have to approve almost every application you get, because denials can take days or longer. You have to get a field investigation conducted. You have to write a detailed report. The report has to go to the attorneys so they check for legal sufficiency, because you have to anticipate that if you deny an application for an immigration benefit, that the alien will file a lawsuit or file an appeal. So the whole thing becomes a point in futility unless it could withstand the scrutiny. So it's got to be done very carefully, whereas if you approve an application, you just take out that old approval stamp and you smack the applications in 3 or 4 places and you staple this onto that and you sign your name there and put an initial over there, and away it goes. So the pressure is on to approve almost everything, and there's no way to determine how long someone has been here. So here's the bottom line. If you think that somebody who's been living in the United States for 5 years should be able to get lawful status being here illegally, then you better be willing to give it to someone who's been here for 15 minutes because you won't be able to tell one from the other. Now, this isn't conjecture. I did this job for 30 years. This is a free-for-all. This is anarchy. This is chaos. And so we wind up going back to the report that I wrote for the Social Contract, and the report made it clear, when you look at the quotes from 9/11 Commission, that immigration fraud, people lying on their applications, was the primary way that the terrorists entered the country and were able to hide in plain sight or embed themselves in the parlance of the 9/11 Commission. Nobody on the set on those TV talk shows, those good morning programs, those news shows on Sunday, they're clueless. They're clueless. They have no idea, and I don't blame them. It's not their fault that they're ignorant about the issue because they never did the job and they have no idea. It just sounds reasonable. And that's the problem. Immigration is arguably the most important of all federal law enforcement responsibilities because it backs up the military. The primary mission of our armed forces is to keep America's enemies as far from our shores as possible. But up close and in person, then it falls to the Border Patrol, and once they get past the border, it falls to ICE. That's how serious this mission is. So you've got people on a TV set who've never made an arrest, never conducted an investigation into law violations, and they're coming up with these wild ideas, and, you know, people are funny about TV. How many times have you gone to the store and you see an item for sale and it's in this fancy, colorful shrink wrap and in the corner it says the magic words, as seen on TV? So now, wow, that was on TV. I got to buy five of them. Really? What does it even mean, as seen on TV? Somebody spent enough money so they put this thing on the television? It's remarkable. I mean, talk about gullibility, but that's how people are. So they watch some guy on a program that they like, and you can pick the network, it doesn't matter. And some guy who went to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Columbia, whichever, and he says, well, it's reasonable that if they've been here for 5 years, and nobody ever says, well, how will you know? How will you know how long that illegal alien has been here? That question doesn't get asked. So now millions of Americans watch the program, think they've learned something, and they shut the TV off, and Harold says to Martha, you know, Martha, that guy makes sense. Why don't they do that? Thinking that he just got some really solid advice from somebody who has no idea as to what he's speaking about. Now, you add to that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that wants to take America's borders down, and we're almost there. They're the reason why we went from 26 visa waiver countries on 9/11 to 38 visa waiver countries now, even after 9/11 Commission warned about the lack of integrity to the visa process. Now we have to tighten it up. We've just eliminated the process altogether for an extra 10 countries. What could possibly go wrong? Or 12 countries. This is lunacy. This is sheer madness. And it's remarkable because I was on a radio show this past month, and the host played a snippet from The View, you know, the ABC program that Barbara Walters had started. And I might be mistaken. I don't want to misspeak. I believe it was Whoopi Goldberg who, when they were talking about Catherine Steinle and her murder, said, who knew that these aliens are coming here and killing people? And that's right, who knew? Because there was recently, within the last couple of weeks, a report by the Wall Street Journal and CNN, I like to give credit where it's due, that said, oh, the Steinle murder was an aberration. This almost never happens because we all know that illegal immigrants, or as they call them, undocumented immigrants, they're almost always far more law-abiding than Americans. My God, 30% of the inmate population in the federal prisons are immigration law violation aliens, or not law violation, immigration, but the law violators are aliens. Now, some of the crimes are immigration-related, But generally, immigration does not prosecute an alien for unlawful reentry unless they have a conviction record. Nobody talks about that either. And then there's been studies done showing how many hundreds of thousands of crimes are committed by aliens who had no right to be here. But that's all right, because the Wall Street Journal plays fast and loose with the truth on these issues, and so does CNN, because the agenda, folks, is to do what the Chamber of Commerce wants, to get the people into the country, to bring the students in, to bring the tourists in, to bring the cheap labor in. And then you see these studies that contradict what they say at CNN, but it never gets reported, almost never gets reported anywhere. So let's have that debate. Why doesn't the Wall Street Journal, you know, put up or shut up? Have that debate with the guy that says, no, we've got the records to prove you're wrong. Back in 1988, when I was assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of the Drug Enforcement Administration here in New York City, I took it on myself to do an analysis of arrest statistics. I had a brain spasm, and I went to my boss, and I said, you know, I'm up here trying to help you with your drug investigations. Maybe you can help me. I'd like to know who you're arresting. I need the arrest records. And there's always that joke about, you know, be careful what you wish for. So it took about a week, and I'm come to work, and there's my desk in this big squat area sitting opposite from a couple of FBI agents and a guy from the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. We had another guy there from British Customs, another guy there from U.S. Customs and the U.S. Marshals Service, and one big happy family, New York City and New York State police officers. We're all in the same big squad area up at DEA Intel. And back then, in 1988, when you asked for arrest records, you didn't get an email with a spreadsheet. You got arrest records. So I come to work, minding my own business. I get off the elevator. I got a cup of coffee in my hand. All's right with the world. The birds are tweeting. I go to my desk, and I can't find my desk because there's so many boxes. And while I'm standing there, everybody's laughing like crazy. Two clerks from the file room show up with hand trucks with more boxes with more arrest records. It took me over 3 months with a handheld calculator. In my spare time, I was putting in extra time. And by the way, for those of you who think, oh, extra time, more money. No, agents don't get more money for that. It was a labor of love, if you will. And no, I'm not trying to take a bow. I'm just telling you, most of the agents I work with really want to do a good job. But there's that old Yiddish expression that when the fish goes bad, it smells from the head. The biggest impediment we have to doing our job is Washington because of the agenda of the politicians from both sides of the aisle. Well, anyway, by the time I got done tabulating the numbers, I found out to my horror that back then, 60% of the people that were arrested by the DEA task force in New York City were foreign-born. Not reported. So here were these women on The View, really worked up, and they said, we had no idea that criminals were coming into the United States. I mean, how could you not imagine that criminals are coming in? Why does someone run the border? Maybe they're desperate for a job, and that's all we keep hearing, they're desperate for jobs. That might be one of the reasons. But how about fugitives that are on the run because they just committed some heinous crime? How about terrorists who want to commit crimes here, or members of the drug cartels? Very naive, but there were the women on The View saying, wow, nobody ever reports on this stuff. Could it be criminals are coming here from other countries? But again, did anybody reach out for an immigration agent? They occasionally bring in Julie Myers. Julie Myers used to be the head of ICE. Julie Myers was a political appointee. She was never really an immigration agent. I've done all these congressional hearings, and in the beginning I was a little bit naive, and I said to John Hostetler, and I think I said it to Jim Sensenbrenner as well. Hostetler at the time was the chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee, Sensenbrenner, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. I said, hey guys, why do you want me to testify? I was just a field agent. I wasn't even a supervisor, let alone a manager, you know, at a high level. And their answer was interesting. And they said, you know, Mr. Cutler, if we bring in people at the top of the food chain, they're going to be humming the company's song. If we really want to know what's going on the street, you're the guy that's going to tell us. And of course they were right. Of course they were right. But why is it that these TV shows never bring on immigration agents? If there's a kidnapping, they bring in the FBI. And when we had those two guys escape from the Clinton Correctional Facility in upstate New York, they brought in marshals, they brought in police. And in fact, the one guy who was shot by a Border Patrol agent. And do you know how many news reports were willing to mention that it was a Border Patrol agent? CNN interviewed a sheriff, and the quote was something to the effect of, well, the guy was shot by a task force officer from the U.S. Border Patrol. Because we've got to keep this issue of the Border Patrol and borders and crime out of the conversation. When Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, was charged with trying to carry out a deadly terrorist attack, Ray Kelly, who at the time was the New York City Police Commissioner, New York City Police is arguably one of the most sophisticated departments in the world. We even have detectives assigned overseas doing counterterrorism work for New York City because of concerns that the FBI and CIA wouldn't share enough information with us. The NYPD has over 35,000 cops. It's not a police department. It's a small army. And Ray Kelly had previously been the commissioner of U.S. Customs. So this is no country bumpkin. But yet the newspapers in New York, when Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, was prosecuted, said, this is Kelly, that Shahzad was a classic example of a homegrown terrorist. I even believe some newspapers called him a homegrown sleeper, which is a contradiction in terms. Because a sleeper is a foreign national who gains entry into the country that he's targeting, either legally, illegally, however he gets here, and he waits for that phone call telling him tomorrow's the day we carry out the attack. That's what a sleeper is. Homegrown sleeper, homegrown terrorist, Faisal Shahzad came here at age 20 on a student visa from Pakistan. By anybody's definition, this guy was not homegrown. Why call him homegrown? Because under no circumstances are we allowed to even think that somebody might come here from another country and pose a threat to our safety. Because that would run contrary to the U.S. Chamber of Horrors. I mean, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Well, one and the same, isn't it? It's propaganda. And it's not about being politically correct. My conservative friends, and I do mean conservative friends, I don't know how we've become such a divided country where we were at war with each other depending on which side of the aisle you're on. I have friends who are Democrats. I have friends and good friends who are Republicans and conservatives. We're all Americans. And the debate is the way you celebrate democracy, freedom of speech, the right for peaceable assemblage. It's right in the First Amendment. But, you know, it's just astonishing to me that we've become this fragmented country where everybody is at everybody's throat and nobody seems to understand the issues or wants to. And there's this narrative out there, and the narrative is under no circumstances can you equate immigration with anything that has to do with crime or terrorism. God forbid, you should tell the truth. So we get all kinds of wacky arrest statistics out of the Border Patrol, again, ignoring the fact that we're a country of 50 border states. Well, the arrests are up, the arrests are down, it means this, it means that, all kinds of crazy interpretation. Here's the point. Do you really want to know whether the borders are secure? Forget those ridiculous, doctored, butchered, twisted statistics from the Border Patrol and how many aliens are arrested. The best metric, the most reliable metric that tells the story about border security, folks, guess what it is? The price and the availability of heroin and the price and the availability of cocaine. That's the metric that you're looking for. But nobody seems to understand that point. So what you really need to understand is that we're being given all kinds of nonsense stories about Border Patrol arrests, but everybody is ignoring the real metric. And the real metric, again, the price and availability of heroin and cocaine. That's what's so astonishing is that no one seems to get it. So then, something very interesting happened. Not long ago, reports were out there how police departments across the country were providing their officers with the antidote to heroin overdoses. That's a pretty damning statement. The fact that you have police departments giving heroin overdose antidotes to the police on patrol, obviously anticipating that they're going to encounter this problem. Astonishing as that was, something else came up that was even more disturbing. Guess who is also now getting the antidote to heroin overdoses? High schools. High schools are now stocking heroin overdose antidotes. How much worse does it have to get? How much worse does it have to get? In fact, let me just see if we can find this for you, because you know when I saw that, it made me sick to my stomach. I mean, truly sick to my stomach. The fact that kids in high school are apparently suffering heroin overdoses. Where do you even begin to go with that kind of information? It is so disturbing. Because these kids are getting hooked on drugs, and most crime has a nexus to narcotics. So if you have people who are suffering from heroin addiction, how do you expect them to succeed in school? How do you expect that their lives are going to turn out? Most crime has a nexus to the drug trade. And it's gotten so bad, so rampant, that high schools now have to keep on hand the antidote to heroin overdoses. It's something that's impossible to fathom. The idea that we are so flooded with narcotics today, so flooded. How in the world is this going to turn out for our children? And the answer is it's not going to turn out well at all. It can't possibly turn out well. Because now the problem that we have is that you have children who are hooked. Do you think they're doing their studies or worrying where they're going to get their next fix? And what will they do to get the next fix? What crime? Whether it's the girls turning to prostitution, the guys turning to robberies, all kinds of crazy stuff. And so you wind up asking yourself, what exactly is the role of government in trying to keep Americans safe and maintain our standing in the world? And yes, I understand that there are concerns that there's a disproportionate amount of minorities that are in jail and we imprison more of our citizens than any other country, any other democracy, percentage-wise. But when I hear reports that the president wants to release criminals who've been involved in the drug trade, we're not talking about personal use. I could understand if you arrest people with small quantities that you don't want to put them in jail. I would actually go along with it. Those people probably, more than anything else, need medical care. They need to be given addiction treatment to get them off their drugs. But when you're dealing with people that are selling those poisons, they are destroying lives. I mean, what in the world are we doing? What's the point to this course of action? Truly astonishing. We have presidential debates coming up. You had the news media trying their best to keep immigration out of the news until Donald Trump came along. Until Ms. Steinle was gunned down. Now we've got another murderer who kidnapped a teenage girl, wanted to rape her, and committed a double homicide, allegedly. You see, the whole point is I don't care what the Wall Street Journal or CNN reports. I can tell you my own experience as an immigration agent is that each and every day, multiple people are losing their lives in our country to aliens who have no right to be here. Last week, if you joined me, you know that my friend Don Rosenberg was on the program with me. Don's son was killed by an alien who had been given temporary protected status, I believe, from Honduras. And that's another issue to consider. There was a hurricane in Honduras 12 years ago, and we are still allowing people from Honduras to stay in the United States almost a generation after a hurricane blew through the island, or the nation, rather. I just look at this and I say, wait a minute. Is anybody paying attention? 12 years after a hurricane, we're still allowing Hondurans to stay in the United States under temporary protected status. And by the way, what's even crazier is that among the people that are being told you don't have to go home are construction workers. Does anybody stop and think about that? If a country has been really heavily damaged and you don't want to send women and their children back to that situation, I agree. You don't want to send the elderly back there, I agree. You don't want to send people with serious health issues back, sure, let's be compassionate. I have no problem with that. But when you're keeping people in the United States who are working as day laborers on construction sites, does anybody ever stop and say, wait a minute, if they need anything in that country, it's what? Construction workers. Why are we telling construction workers they can stay in the United States rather than go home and fix their country? You see, nobody is doing this out of compassion. We're being told, oh, we're being compassionate. No, we are not. The building contractors would rather have the illegal alien day laborers who will work for cheap wages. Now, the work they do may be substandard, but what the hell? They don't have to live with it. The consumer does. And believe me, the consumer doesn't save money when they hire a contractor who hires illegal aliens, because the contractor keeps the profits. And if they're hiring these people off the books, that means that instead of money being paid into Social Security and Medicare, two trust funds that are going bankrupt quickly, they're not paying into those trust funds. If they were hiring American workers or lawful immigrant workers, they would have to put money in if they were paying them on the books. That would help Social Security. That would help Medicare. You know, and you listen to the lies. Oh, Social Security is running out. And if we don't pass comprehensive reform, we won't have enough money to put into the trust fund. Folks, these are all lies, because the way the system is now working, foreign workers aren't in the Obamacare program, so that saves the employer $3,000 off the top. If you're training if you're using foreign students who are here and they're getting optional practical training, they don't have to pay into the trust funds either. So this is all money that should be going to support our government, and it's not. Because the lobbyists are getting what they want for their clients, and the clients could care less about the fact that they're looting America. This is anti-American. It's against common sense. But I want you, this weekend, here's your homework assignment, boys and girls, watch the news programs and listen to the debates, the discussions about immigration, and no one is going to talk about these issues. They're all going to say the same thing. We need comprehensive reform. Then we'll know who's here. No, we won't. In fact, Congressman Lou Barletta questioned Jay Johnson, the head of DHS, questioned him. He said, how well will you be able to screen these people? And he admitted they won't. They won't. This is all a charade. We are allowing greed to supplant common sense and national security, folks. We are creating our own nightmare. And what I'm concerned about, and I want you to give this some thought over the weekend, not that I want to ruin your weekend or your night's sleep, but as I told Jim Sensenbrenner when I met with him when he was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, if I can't sleep at night, I don't want you sleeping at night. 19 terrorists did so much damage, not just to America, but to the world almost 14 years ago, which is why I wrote this massive article for the Social Contract. Just 19. We have tens of thousands of people in the United States today who cannot be properly vetted because they come from a part of the world where it's just impossible to vet them all. And we're turning them loose without holding on to them long enough to figure out who we're dealing with, which is crazy. And just imagine if a tenth of 1% of all these people turn out to be bad guys. So we're just talking about a few hundred, let's say. We'll be optimistic. Imagine a few hundred who did what the 9/11 terrorists did, those 19. Think of the magnitude of the danger this creates for America. And it's not just airplanes. It's not just airplanes. But no one's saying a word. No one is saying a word. No one's saying, wait a minute, we need to err on the side of caution. And most politicians from both parties lack the guts, the moral fiber, to stand up and say, stop, stop what you're doing. This doesn't make sense. There is one member of Congress who's going to try to stop the refugee program. I hope others join him. Not because I'm opposed to refugee programs, but not the way we're running them. Several years ago, I was called to testify about a hearing about detention facilities and how we were holding on to families. And I think reasonable people would probably agree with me. And I said that especially when we're dealing with children, I don't want them to stay in a facility that even smells the slightest bit like a prison. That's not right. I don't want that to be anybody's first memory of the United States. I said we should be able to build facilities that more closely resemble a hotel, like, you know, a Holiday Inn or a Days Inn or, you know, Red Roof Inn. I don't know. Pick some place that's relatively inexpensive, where the kids get some schooling and recreation and so forth, but where they can't leave, so that the family does not disperse out there, and then we find out to our horror that they turn out to be bad guys. There have been a series of articles about people that we've admitted into the United States as refugees and in other visas, and then after the fact they say, oh, gee whiz, you know, there may be some terrorists among them. Let's go look for them. Lots of luck. I don't care if it takes 6 months. Whatever it takes, you sit these folks in a facility where they have recreation, where they have, you know, you make it as close to a resort as you can. This is America. But I don't want them getting lost out there, and then we have to go hunt them down, and God forbid, wind up hunting them down after they pull off an attack like Faisal Shahzad, like the Tsarnaev brothers. I mean, think about the Tsarnaev family. They came here, they applied for asylum. As soon as we gave them asylum, which means we face persecution if we go home, we can't go home. Well, as soon as we gave them lawful status, they voluntarily went home. Why didn't someone look at that and say, whoa, these guys may have lied, you know? They said they can't go back to Russia, and then they just went back to Russia. You think maybe there's a problem here? Do you think? No one said a word. One of them wound up getting citizenship. What are we doing? And their sister was out there floating around, and no one, even after the Boston bombing, no one thought to pick her up. And from the accounts that I read, she wound up getting arrested when she started to make threats about blowing up her ex-boyfriend. This is the sister of these two terrorists, one of whom is dead, the other one has just been sentenced to death. Do you think maybe you should pick her up? I mean, certainly you have to look at the crime that was likely committed, that she lied on the application claiming asylum, because, you know, the whole family went back to Russia. As I said when I was speaking to Senator Sessions and Congressman Louie Gohmert when I was in Florida with the David Horowitz Freedom Center, I had the privilege of being on a panel discussion with those gentlemen and with Congressman John Fleming. I said, you know, this wasn't low-hanging fruit. This was fruit in the basket. They knew who the family was that was on everyone's radar scope. Why was she still out there? See, there are things that we can do. We can't make the world perfect. We can't get rid of all the threats, but we can do an awful lot to make us as safe as possible. When the Obama administration could turn criminal aliens loose, claiming this was because of budgetary issues with the sequestration of funding, I have a problem with it. You find some other places to save money. And if you look at the Inspector General reports, the administration refused to provide the information as to who they released. Because I assure you that some of the criminals they released went out and committed more crime and maybe killed more people, maybe raped more people. And you know what? It was preventable. Because we're talking about people who were in custody and we turned them loose. Why? So that they would get the American people angry at the Republicans and say, see, they didn't give us our money. So we're going to have a temper tantrum like three-year-olds and stamp our feet and turn criminals loose on the community. And by the way, generally, transnational criminals commit most of the crime inside the ethnic immigrant communities because that's where they live. Whether it's the women who are forced into prostitution, the drug sales, all that business happens most predominantly within the ethnic immigrant communities. And not just the Latino community, this notion about the Latinos. This is, again, a divide and conquer. It's despicable. You have so many Americans of Latino ancestry, descent, ethnicity, however you want to phrase it, who are multi-generational Americans, who've served in military combat, who've lost family members in wars. But everyone's now convinced that if you're an illegal alien, your last name is either Garcia or Rodriguez, which is bunk. It's infuriating. It's despicable. This has nothing to do with a race or an ethnicity. The open borders anarchists have turned it into that. I can tell you I've arrested people in my 30-year career who didn't speak Spanish. They came from Asia. They came from Africa. They came from Europe. They came from the Caribbean. They came from Canada. It's not just Mexico. So when we keep hearing, what are you going to do about the Mexican border? Why? What are you going to do about the Canadian border? What are you going to do about the stowaways on ships? What are you going to do about the people who come here and violate the terms of their visas? No one asked those follow-up questions. We need to start asking those questions, folks. We need to start asking those questions. Because if you look at it rationally, again, I don't care if it's the Latino community or the Asian or the Russian or the Caribbean, it's within those ethnic immigrant communities that the greatest amount of damage is being done by transnational criminals, because that's where they're living and operating. And yes, occasionally you hear of a case like the Steinle case, and there have been others. But if you want to talk about pro-immigrant versus anti-immigrant, the best thing we can do for ethnic immigrant communities is to prevent the entry and continued presence of criminal aliens from around the world. It would make us all a lot safer. It would make us all a lot safer. But as soon as you start to talk about that, and especially the Democratic Party, and I don't have a clue as to what in the world they're thinking about, or what in the world anybody else is thinking about who listens to this garbage, oh, it's not compassionate. You're splitting up families. Do you know how many family members fall victim to the violence of their loved one because the guy's off the wall or he's sociopathic? Go on the line. Look at the newspapers and see who the victims are. If it's a Latino name, more often than not, not exclusively, but more often than not, the victim of the violence is a Latino. The Russians, same deal. The Asians, the same deal. No one talks about that. Oh, they're splitting up families. Right. Like the family is thrilled that this sociopath is coming to dinner at night, and they're scared to death that if he picks up the electric carving knife, something more than the turkey may get sliced. Speak out, folks. We have to start to grow a spine. The stakes are very, very high. There's no do-overs in this business. There really isn't. The presidential debates are starting next Thursday, I believe, is when Fox News will be holding the first debate. Please listen carefully. And please write the letters. Speak to the journalists. Call them up. Write them emails. Do whatever you have to do. Make it clear that we have the right to know. We need to know where these people stand on all of these issues. You know, it's a circus as it is. Let's at least try to get some information along the way. And by asking the questions, maybe, just maybe, we can convince these folks that we're not quite as dumb as they hope that we are, that we really understand the issue, and that there's a lot more at stake here than dishwashers and people mowing lawns. And that's what all of us really need to be doing, ladies and gentlemen. We need to be getting our voices heard, because that's what the First Amendment is about. This is supposed to be government of the people, by the people, for the people. Not the corporations, not the companies. It's about the American people. And we the people are certainly being ignored. We certainly are. And I think that's why Donald Trump's message is resonating. Because suddenly he's saying things that nobody else had the guts to say. Because the pollsters, these political consultants, said, oh, don't go near that topic. Oh, no, you're going to upset somebody. Ladies and gentlemen, I suggest to you that you cannot make an omelet without breaking eggs. True leaders take on the tough issues. Any fool can talk about the insignificant stuff. It's the real leader that can address the difficult issues. And if ever America needed a true leader, the time is now. We are in deep fertilizer. We're being challenged in so many ways. The threats are coming at us from multiple directions. We're being lied to by the people that we've elected to represent us. It's astonishing. This deceptive use of language, Hillary Clinton running around and saying, well, the Republicans don't want the immigrants to get the vote, get the citizenship, rather. Get citizenship. Really? We naturalize over 500,000 new citizens every year, and I've never heard anybody of either party say, oh, we should not be giving aliens who have green card citizenship. But you see, that's what happens when you use this language trick of saying, well, they're all immigrants. So they don't want the illegal alien, quote-unquote, immigrants to get citizenship. Well, guess what? They're not entitled. One of the key requirements for naturalization is good moral character. If you're an illegal alien, how are you of good moral character? And if it doesn't matter how you come here anyway, then why do we bother going through the charade of an inspection at ports of entry? And that's the question that I raised when I wrote this article, and I talked about this business on Front Page Magazine. This notion that illegal aliens can be law-abiding. No, they can't. No, they can't. That statement minimizes the importance of our immigration laws. Oh, the guy's a good guy except for the fact that he trespassed on America. The guy's a good guy except he burglarized my aunt's home. That's what you're saying. Would you dare in the same breath say that the guy who broke into someone's house was law-abiding? Of course not. Law-abiding is a very clear issue. It means you follow the law. You enter the United States through a port of entry. Your paperwork was in order. You answered the questions that you were asked honestly. And when you were supposed to leave, if you came here on a temporary visa, you left as you were supposed to. That's an example of law-abiding. When you sneak in the dead of night, don't tell me you're law-abiding. That's not law-abiding. But you see, we're hearing it. It's not just O'Reilly. He was just the latest guy to say it. We're hearing it all the time. Oh, he's undocumented. Oh, these poor people, they're undocumented. Folks, get past it. Let's grow a spine. I'm going to give you a final parting thought. When I do speaking events around the country, people say to me, well, I'm just one person, what can I do? And I understand, it seems overwhelming. So I want you to think of something. If right now I said to you, I'll give you a dollar for every leader of the Second World War who figured prominently in the history books, and I'm going to give you 30 seconds, how many names could you come up with in 30 seconds? 5, 10 names, 12 names? Isn't that remarkable? So many people died during the Second World War. National borders were changed. All sorts of things happened. Right? And yet you'd be hard-pressed to come up quickly with more than a dozen, maybe 15 names. You know, good, bad, or evil. Whether you want to talk about FDR, whether you want to talk about Harry Truman, whether you want to talk about George Patton, whether you want to talk about Eisenhower, Churchill, you know, or you want to talk about the evil Hitler or Mussolini, you know, how many names can you quickly come up with? My point is this. History is only written by a few names, by a few people. Not by the millions, but by a few. When you go to the park and you see a statue there, it was erected to commemorate an important action that a person did on a particular day when it mattered. Perhaps that morning they woke up and had no idea that they would become part of history. But during the course of that day, something transpired, something happened, and suddenly they were thrust into a pivotal situation and they did what was necessary. All of us have the potential to write the next history book. All of us have the potential to make a profound difference in the course of history and in the direction we're going. Don't pass up the opportunity. You can't be a good parent if you ignore the immigration issue, because this is about the future of our country, and as a consequence, it's about the future of our children and their children. It's kind of like the lottery, folks. You got to be in it to win it. You know, it's always a delight to join you at the end of the week, play that inevitable game of catch-up and try to sort things through. And I find it a pleasure to be able to do this with you at the end of the week. But just to quickly run through the names of the articles that I'd like for you to look at and the websites I really want you to go visit. And by the way, if you like what you see, if you find it instructional, if you find it helpful, if you find it gives you insight you didn't have before, I ask you for one small favor. Please pass the information along to as many people as you can. I call it my bucket brigade of truth. It's increasingly difficult to find real news out there in the news media. I've been doing quite a few interviews these days with Newsmax TV. I'm very pleased to do their program, One American News Network. But it's increasingly difficult to get the real straight skinny, as the saying goes. So what would really be a good thing is if you like what you're reading, please pass the information along. You know, be part of my bucket brigade of truth. The past week, I wrote an article for the summer 2015 edition of The Social Contract. Again, the title, The 9/11 Commission Report and Immigration, an Assessment 14 Years After the Attacks. And the report is exactly what I said it is, and it runs about 27 pages. It's kind of long, but I've given you tons of information. There's no hamburger helper. It's all solid beef. You know, where's the beef, that old commercial? It's just about all beef. The other article, June 28th, I wrote for Front Page Magazine, Illegal Aliens Are Not Law-Abiding. And, of course, this goes back to this conversation we just had, this discussion. And finally, a day earlier, on July 27th, I wrote an article for CAPS, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, CAPS Web, my friends in Santa Barbara, and I hope they're listening. And the title of my article was Heroin Epidemic, the Real Metric for Determining Border Security. Forget those ridiculous arrest numbers. Just look at the metric of heroin, because that stuff is coming into the country, and not just across the Mexican border, although I'm sure the Mexican border figures prominently. I assure you it's coming in through Canada, it's coming in at the airports, and it's certainly coming in through the ships. If you remember the French Connection case, that was heroin from France, and it was hidden in the rocker panels of a car that was brought to the United States on a cargo ship. So it's not just the Mexican border. I wanted to spell this business about the Mexican border. We need to secure that border, but that's not the be-all and end-all. It's only one hole in the bottom of that immigration colander. And we better get the politicians to tell us what they have planned for those other holes in that colander, folks. Really important. Anyway, I really want to thank all of you for ending your work week with my program. If you're listening live, if you're listening on podcast, I have no idea when you're listening, but I hope you are listening. I hope you find it helpful, interesting, worthwhile. And please pass the information along to your friends and tell them that they need to tune into the Michael Cutler Hour every Friday evening, 7 p.m. right here on the USA Radio Network or on the podcasts, because I think this is information that all Americans must have. And then please reach out to your elected representatives and let them come to understand that we're not as dumb as they hope we are, because democracy is not a spectator sport. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you next week right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.